Well, good morning. What time is it? That's actually afternoon here. For me, I just I went to bed at 5:47, or that's when I started to go to bed. So after 6 o'clock this morning, I went to bed. So this is the afternoon now, but for me, it's the morning. So I'm going to call it morning. But I guess I could say afternoon, but this is Word Green. It's December 26th. 2022, 1432 hours now, and I just would like to make perhaps a short or perhaps a longer video here, depending on what I decide, but I wanted to show you that, well, there's a very interesting article, which I haven't actually read, but it shows how to use Automator to create keyboard shortcuts. It's called Open Mac Apps Faster Than Ever by Creating Keyboard Shortcuts for Them. But that's not what I wanted to show you. That's just the backdrop for what I do want to show you, which is this system preferences. And I wanted to just to talk about Ikuna, because I had an amazing experience this morning with Ikuna. It actually, let me just try to adjust my screen here. Well, I can make that bigger, actually. Yeah, there's no reason why not. Okay. I can make it bigger. I had an amazing experience this morning with Ikuna. It did the most amazing thing. I booted my system, but yesterday I had forgotten. I remembered. I knew that I'd forgotten, but I'd forgotten to close Safari. So when I booted, that meant it tried to boot Safari. And that usually caused all my problems, right? With all my windows being in the wrong places on the different monitors, because I have four external monitors in addition to the laptop, the M1 Max MacBook Pro, 16-inch is what I have. That's my laptop, and then I have four external monitors, a Philips 4K, an Acer XZ342CK, ultra-wide 34-inch, 3440 by 1440, that's what that one is. That was just one of my monitors, the Acer. The Dell Quantum Dot OLED, it's 3440 by 1440 also, 34-inch, ultra-wide. And its model number is the AW3423DWF. I don't know how I memorized all that. I don't know the model number for my AOC, but it's a 2560 by 1440. It's over, well, which is, that's my right hand, okay. Well, it's not really that way, is it? When I play this back, it's going to look like I'm pointing the wrong direction, maybe? Is that possible? Because I'm pointing the wrong way in real life, but on the screen, I'm pointing the correct way. So, it's really over there. In actuality, compared to where the screen is, the program is, you know, on my screen. But it's to my right, actually, which would be opposite to that. So it's actually over there is where it really is. But yeah, that's where it really is. It's my AOC monitor. It's one of my favorite monitors of all time. It's really nice. I mean, it's just so, it's got a beautiful, once I figured out how to get the color on it, I had to figure out how to set the color. I need to dim it down again. It's not, my monitor program, what's it called again? Look it up. Monitor Control Program, which is a free app. That's right, and Ikuna is a free app, absolutely open source, free, absolutely free, open source. Never pay for anything to do with it. It's not one of those, like, that's one thing I wanted to talk about too. When they say free apps, sometimes you get, it's free to try. Well, that's not one of those. But, you know, it's free to try, but then they want you to keep bugging you to subscribe or to pay for it. Or, you know, it's free to try. It's free initially, but it's really not free, if you know what I mean. Well, that's not what this is. Ikuna is absolutely free. And then the same with the most important thing of all that I learned was this thing called I think it's the most important, but Ikuna is probably just as important, actually. But, I mean, Ikuna is absolutely fantastic. But it does have a few glitches, which I'll talk about. And today I've noticed a couple of glitches, but they were easily resolved. But it was something I should talk about. But Display Placer is the big thing. That's the thing that I thought was the most... But I know it's the most important aspect of what I learned, was to run the app. Oh, run the script. Run the bash script using Automator. Every time my computer starts, it runs the bash script that runs Display Placer, which places all my displays correctly on the screen. So anyway, when I booted up this morning, right, it always runs that automatic bash script. And then when Ikuna comes up, you can click on Ikuna and, you know, start your workspace, you know, start all the apps that Ikuna can launch. But the thing is, I did not shut down any apps, right? Last night, I didn't shut anything down. My Safari was open. And I can't stop talking about this. It's so exciting. Because let's go back to the beginning. I never had problems with this before, when I had the two Acer monitors and the Dell was not here. I never had any problems. Every time I booted, all my windows opened up perfectly. It never caused a problem having four monitors. I never experienced any of these issues, okay? Only when I got the new Dell monitor, then I started getting these issues. So there's something about the Dell monitor that threw everything out of whack. Because even when the Acer computer was damaged, and my main Acer, which is the lower one, it was damaged, but I could still use it through the HDMI, and everything still booted perfectly. All the windows were configured properly. Everything was... I never noticed this issue, okay? I never noticed it with four external monitors ever. And I had these monitors ever since I bought them and set them up. They all worked fine. But then when the Acer was damaged, they still worked fine. But when I got the new Dell, because the Acer got damaged, and I may not have needed the Dell either. It's just something I thought, it's time. This is a good reason for me to buy a new, a decent monitor. Like, I never bought a really decent monitor in my life. I paid $500 max for any monitor, which is, these are large monitors. I mean, the large, you know, 2560 or 1440p. 1440p monitors, 32-inch monitors, you know, or 4K monitors, the Philips, they're only about $500. And the Acer UltraWide, they were $500. I mean, or $590 actually, probably $600. $500 or $600 is all I paid ever for any one monitor. And they were big monitors with, you know, resolutions 3440 by 1440, or, you know, the 4K is 38, whatever that is, 3840 by, is it 3840? Yeah, 3840 by whatever that is. Whatever. Let's find out what it is. Let's find out what... It's going to show me right here. So here's my... Let's talk about it. Here's my monitor display setup. I'll even maximize it so you can see it. The Philips is there on the top right. Top left. The lower left is my main... It's not the main monitor anymore, because the main one's shown by this highlighted strip at the top. That's the Dell. But what it should be my main monitor, or could be, it's my actual computer monitor. It's the laptop monitor right here at the bottom left. Then, and that would be the main monitor by display, but you can drag this strip here, this little light strip, you see that? Can drag it to different monitors if you want to make them the main monitor. And I dragged it to the Dell Alienware. That's the Alienware 3423 DWF, and then above that, so that's my main monitor, the Alienware, the Dell right here in the lower middle. Then the upper middle is the Acer XZ342CK ultra wide. These are both ultra wide, 34 inch, they're the same size. And then on the far right is the AOC Q32G1WG4. That's what the model number of that AOC is. Okay, so if we want to look at resolutions, we go to display settings. The currently, it's the default for the display, for the main display, which is the Dell. It's set at 100 Hertz. Obviously, everything is standard rotation in my setup. If I look at the Philips, it's always 60 Hertz. It doesn't have anything higher than that as a refresh rate. It's set to the default, but what is the default? Let's find out. Does it say? No. Okay, it's not. It doesn't tell me what the default is. Okay, let's look at the other one. Okay, this one is scaled. That's the Acer XZ 342CK Ultra Wide. It says it's scaled, but it's at full resolution, 3440 by 1440. And it's running at 60 Hertz. Oh, that could be running a much higher refresh rate too, actually. Like maybe. We can check and see. Yeah, that can run much higher. So it's not at the moment. It can run higher. But I don't want to change it because I know that can throw everything. It can throw everything out of whack. It's better to run at as low a refresh rate as you can, because it saves on system resources. Okay, so that's the reason, because you're not going to be using your processor or your graphics, whatever it is. Your GPU will be under a lighter load. You want to keep it reasonable. As long as you can scan your mouse around and it doesn't have significant lag, then you're okay. 100 Hertz to me is better than 60, but 60 is 40 is not enough, but 60 is sufficient. You know, generally, it's 60 Hertz works. But with these bigger monitors, I don't think 60 Hertz works quite as well because they have more pixels, right? So, but I look at the Philips, it's 60 Hertz is adequate for moving the mouse on the Philips. And it's a 4K. So now let's take a look at the Philips again, just for interest, and we'll try and change the resolution. Well, there it is. It's telling me what it is. So here's the resolution we're at: 3840 by 2160. That's what it is. It's a 4K with that resolution, 3840 by 2160. Okay, that's the Philips. So I just needed to hover the mouse over top of the highlighted selection there, right? And then if we want to look at the AOC, let's look at the AOC if we can. Is that the AOC? That's the Apple display, right? And that, if we go to scaled, right? Well, that's looking at scaled. It's now set to scaled? Can't be. It's not telling me what its resolution is either. Yeah, I'm surprised. I was sure I could find this out using this, but we'll just do it another way. Let's just go about this Mac. System report. Graphics. Okay. We look at the graphics. There we go. See the Dell Alienware. That's the AW Alienware. 3440 by 1440. Okay, built-in display 3456 by 2234. That's my built-in 16-inch display. It's incredible the resolution on that. And then the Acer 3440 by 1440. The AOC is 2560 by 1440. It tells them, and the Philips is 3840 by 2160. So that's the way to get that information far more efficiently than this. But coming back here, this is how I've arranged the monitors. But what you need to do when you're rebooting, so every time I boot, I'm gonna take a brief break here. I'm gonna take a brief break. Okay. Yeah, I had to turn it down. I had to turn down the heat in the kitchen. Among other things. Because it's, for me, early morning. So I had certain other duties that I had to attend to. But I would say, you're listening to André Gagnon, Presque Bleu, from 2000. The album. And some of the songs are the same as on the very best of André Gagnon, because some of the songs on this album are his very best. So that's why there's some overlap. Well, so my monitor arrangement is like this, okay? As you see it here. Now, the problem I was having once I got the new monitor, the Dell, for one thing, it would not be the main monitor. I would boot up and it wasn't the main monitor, so I had to reboot because it didn't remember that it was supposed to be the main monitor. And sometimes rebooting would fix that. That was one problem. But that was true of the Acer. That was true of the Acer once I started using the lower Acer. When this was the lower Acer, when I was, after it got damaged, I was using it over HDMI instead of DisplayPort. The Alienware monitor is on DisplayPort. I haven't tried using it on the other inputs either, on the other DisplayPort input or on HDMI, but the Acer monitor, when it was on HDMI, it kept coming up too slowly, and it would not be the main monitor, so I'd have to reboot. And every time I rebooted, sometimes three times, twice, five times sometimes, I think, I forget. But usually only twice I'd have to reboot to get this bottom center monitor as my main monitor. That would mean that it was my main monitor in the sense that the login screen would come up on that monitor, okay? But the other thing is, this is now, ever since I got the Dell a few days ago, it wasn't very long ago when I got the Dell, and it seems like for forever. I mean, I've had this Dell, it seems like, this Alienware monitor. And yesterday I did a pixel refresh on it, too. After 4 hours, you do a pixel refresh. And I did the pixel refresh either once or twice, I'm not even sure, because it was hard. It shuts off after you do the pixel refresh, too. Then you have to turn it on again. And I think it turned off, so it must have done the pixel refresh, but the green power light flashes when it's doing pixel refresh, and I didn't really notice that the first time, so I did it again. But I've got the manual for it, so I can learn all that stuff. It's just brand new. So this Alienware monitor, the first time I rebooted it, I think I had this issue, yeah. The very first time I rebooted it, the issue was that this monitor arrangement was not retained. So every time I rebooted, but see, the first day that I got the Alienware, I did not reboot right away, right? I was using it. So the next day is when I rebooted and realized that this arrangement would not be preserved with this Alienware monitor hooked up, with it hooked up with these other monitors. This arrangement would be lost every time I rebooted, and I'd have to drag these shapes around, drag these monitor shapes into position every time I booted, which is just a nightmare. So I got this program called Display Placer. It's a very simple program that is free, absolutely free again. You get it on GitHub. It's written by Jake Hilborn. And it's just free, and you can install it using Homebrew. There are other ways to install it too, but there's no DMG file for it, so you have to install it some other way. So I used Homebrew in Mac OS Terminal, and well, I can even show you. So I'll run Terminal. Okay, I can probably show you my history here, right? Let's see. Display Placer. I was running Display Placer there. But let's go back to where I installed it. It's not very long ago that I installed it. So once we get back to it, we'll see. There it is, Homebrew. So what I had to do That's when I changed directory into the directory where it was installed. That's the directory it was installed in. Right there. Right. Where was it? There. I can't see it though. Hang on a second. Let's get this to where I can see it. Yeah. Just bring it down where I can, where we can see it. It's the binary directory here. It's /opt/homebrew/seller/displayplacer/1.2.0/binary. That's the directory where it was installed. Okay, so let's just go up to where I actually did install it. Here it is. Xcode select. Oh yes, in order to install it, I had to install Xcode. And I had to install something else. So you need to know that as well. That's something I have to tell you. What's this? Let's go back. Can I find it? No. Here it is. That was for a different program. I'm going to come. Okay, here we go. There it is. Brew tap. This is how you install it. First, you have to install Homebrew. Okay? But when I installed, so Homebrew was already installed, but once I installed since I had already installed Homebrew, I could just say brew and then tap, and then /Jake Hilborn, %, with spaces, and brew install display placer, and that's how you install display placer, that line there. So this line right here, brew tap /Jake Hilborn, %, brew install display placer. That's the installation instruction. That's the command in OS, Mac OS terminal. In the terminal, you type that command, or you don't actually type it. You copy it from Jake Hilborn's page on GitHub. So you go to his page on GitHub. You find it by do a search for display placer and Jake Hilborn, and you'll find a link. Find the GitHub page, search GitHub, or else just do a Google search for Jake Hilborn display placer, and you'll find GitHub, the GitHub page. And then you go to the GitHub page, you copy this command, okay? Then you have to install Homebrew. You can find out how to do that. Some Google that and find out how to do that first. Install Homebrew. Then it gave me an error. It said you have to install the command line tools, Xcode select install. So I wanted to install, I had to install those. But when I went to install those, it gave me another error. I believe it was when I tried to install those. Yeah, I think it was when I tried to install these command line tools. It gave me, and that's how you do it, Xcode hyphen select space --, install. When you have to copy these commands exactly. When I pressed enter on this one, it gave me an error that says you have to install the developer's toolkit or whatever it was. So, and that was a much bigger program. It took me 45 minutes to install it, because to download it, I mean. It took a long time to download that. But it was going to take, it told me it was going to take 225 hours initially to install it. Because I guess there are other people downloading. To download it, it told me it was going to take 225 hours to download initially, because it was downloading slowly. But then that sped up, and then it was, after a few minutes, it was telling me, 10 hours, and then it was telling me 2 hours or whatever, and then it just kept getting faster and faster. So perhaps, my theory is there was a queue, and I was in the queue, and as other people were finished, I got closer to the front of the queue. I was in higher priority, and so I started to get a faster download speed, and it downloaded. It was a file of about 2 gigabytes, I think. So it took 45 minutes to download it. And then I installed it. And then I was able to run this Xcode select install. Okay? But, it was able to do that already. I think it installed Xcode select install, but it wasn't able to use it yet until I installed the kit. Because it didn't, you notice I didn't, after I installed or type that command, I went right back to typing the... I'm just going up and down with my up and down arrow. So as I go down to the next command, I retried this install of Jake Hilborn's display placer. So that meant that I must have succeeded on this prior one of Xcode Select. So then I went and installed Jake Hilborn's, and then it worked that time. So I know that because then the next thing I tried to do was run display placer. So I know that. Then I had to change directory to get to where that program was before I could actually run it. But then eventually I did that. And then I tried running it. Right? And I failed many times here because I called it display spacer, which is the wrong name. That's another reason why I was failing. And finally I got a success. When I got display placer list, that was the correct command. I was in the correct directory at the time I typed it. So the next thing that I got or tried to do was this, which is the actual display placer command that display placer list command gave me. It gave me this command, so I tried to run it. But it was telling me hertz 165, right? And that failed. 165 hertz failed because 165 hertz was not available on the Dell monitor at that time. At that moment, for some reason, probably because there weren't enough resources in the computer system to run that. That's probably what it was. That's probably because my Acer was running at 144 hertz or something like that. That's the reason. Right now, this would probably work if I ran it. But when I reboot, it'll be back to 100 hertz. Well, let's run it right now. Enter. It works. Nope. See, look at that. It couldn't find it. That's the error I get. It tells me that the Acer could not find 165 hertz. See that? Couldn't find the 165. Okay? So otherwise, it's just trying to... What this command is telling all the monitors to do is telling them where they are physically, or virtually, I should say. But the virtual arrangement of the monitors is telling them where they're placed and what their resolutions are. And that's the same as what we're looking at when we look at this. It's telling them this exact thing here. It's telling them this exact positioning for all these monitors, okay? So that's what that command does. It gives them all, it tells them position-wise, you know, these are the positions, -3, 38, 40, and minus, that's the horizontal, I guess, is it? Yeah, and then the vertical position is -1158 for the Phillips. I can tell that's the Phillips because it's 3840. Right? That's the position. It has to be 3840 to the left so that it can line up. Right? And this is the other Acer because it has to be -1440 above. That's -1440. Well, that would be above, right? And it's zero because it's aligned left and right with my lower the Dell. So this is the Acer one, and you can tell because of its resolution too. The Philips one, you can see the resolution too by here. The res is 3840. Sorry. Yeah. The res is 3840 by 2160, and then it gives you the origin is -3840. So that's the Phillips. But it's giving us all these things, okay? Oh, wait a minute. Look. It's specifying the wrong resolution. That's wrong. Why is it doing that? It's specifying this. It's specifying the wrong resolution here. For the 16-inch. I'm gonna try that later. I'll try changing that later, I think. Do we want to try that? Let's see. This is crazy. It's craziness. I mean, I can show you so many things now because of the power of this. It's just amazing. graphics. Three, four, five, six by 2, 2, 3, 4. So that's what it should be. Let's go back. 3, 4, 5, 6 by 2, 2, 3, 4. Well, maybe right now. No, but this is. I don't think this will cause any problem. I hope it doesn't. 3, 4, 5, 6 by 2, 2, 3, 4. By 2, 2, 3, 4. That's what it should be. The other, I know the other one was scaled. Oh, but then, oh, okay. I can't change that because it set the origin minus 1728 by 1002. I can't change it unless I scale these numbers appropriately also and precisely. So I better not do that. But that's the strangest thing. I'm not gonna attempt to do that. Okay. I won't run that. Okay. Let's just go Control U. That deletes that command from the sequence. Okay. So let's go back. Well, we don't have to show that anymore anyway. But what was I gonna do? What was I just gonna say here? Something I was gonna say. Here we have our displays. Yeah, I know what I was going to. I'm going to look at this. Let's take a look at it and see what it's telling us. Right? If we scale it, it's the strangest thing. It's telling me it's scaled. No, that's. Sorry. This is the one. This is the internal display. It's set for default for display. Yeah. It's set for default for display. Okay, so I'm not going to tinker with it because it's working, and I know that it's still giving me a high resolution, or I believe it is, because it's still it's using the default resolution of the display, so that's fine. So it must be using the maximum resolution. So there's no. Yet, that's not how Display Placer sees it. It sees it differently. It sees it at one half that resolution. Anyway. But this is how I'm doing it. Okay, there's always more to learn. There's always more to learn. That's the thing about these things. But that's how I'm doing it. So today, when I booted, that's what it looks like. My monitor arrangement. So every time I boot, I have to get this back. That's why I run this program in users and groups under login items. It boots monitor control and EQ Mac every time I boot for my monitor control of brightness and also for my audio boosting. So the Andre Gagnon album is over now. Maybe we could just start it again here from the beginning. But Automator is the other one that I run here on every time I boot. Okay? It runs Automator. And that's what configures my this display arrangement here is that Automator program. That's an app that I created using Jake Hilborn's program. The script given by his program and using Automator, I created the app that runs, that configures these monitors in this shape every time. Every time I boot, it logs in and it runs this, or it runs that Automator program that configures this. Okay? But that in itself was not enough to solve my problem because it would achieve this configuration so I could drag my mouse. Like, it's important because if I drag my mouse to the right, I want to be sure I'm going to the monitor that's on the right. If I drag it to the left, I want to be sure I'm getting to the appropriate monitor there as well. And if I go up, I want to be... That's why these have to be configured. if they were in a long chain, which is what is the default probably, when you boot up, they're just in a long chain, then you have to drag to the right on from one monitor to get to all the other monitors, and yet they're not situated in a physical chain. They're actually one above the other, and so it's not intuitive. You can't do it, right? You can't move your mouse around very easily. It's not convenient that way. You could do it. You just have to learn how fast and how far you have to move your mouse to get to each monitor, right? It can be done. It's easier to have them configured like this in their physical locations, okay? There's no gaps between them. Because if there were a gap, you wouldn't be able to get across with the mouse. So they have to be positioned here in the virtual space with no gaps between. That's important, okay? So there. Now, having done that, though, I still would boot and get this I wouldn't get the random screen orientation. No, this was always correct. But the window positions, all the windows would open up in different monitors. They wouldn't be in the proper place. So if I ran, like, let's close terminal. Okay, if I run terminal now, again, really? It remembers where I put it. That is strange. I didn't think it would remember where I put it. So that's why it's causing so much trouble. So when I quit again and rerun terminal, it now remembers that orientation, right? Okay. Fine, and I come back to my preferences. Okay, so whatever, let's close terminal because we don't need it anymore, and it's easier just to boot it anytime we want. But this is amazing. In a previous video, I showed you how to store the terminal position, how to store the terminal group, the Windows group. Of the four terminal windows that I have on my computer, they're stored as a group. And I showed you how to do that in terminal. But for the sake of review, you just go up to Window, Save Windows as a Group, and then you save it. And you overwrite if you want to overwrite what's there. So that's it. You save, you press Save, and then it says you want to replace it or not. I can say Cancel, no, Cancel. I can cancel that operation. I can close terminal up here. I can say, there we go. So if you're new to Mac OS, that's one of the quirks of terminal. But the beauty of this, of Jake Hilborn's display placer, is phenomenal, but it didn't solve the issue of these windows popping up wherever they wanted. So, like, terminal would be on this monitor, the Philips, instead of on this main monitor where it was now. It would be up here. The two windows of terminal would be up there instead of where they were supposed to be down here. Or they'd be up on this monitor up here. They wouldn't be where they're supposed to be. So the windows weren't coming up correctly. So the solution for that was to get the program called Icuna, which I showed you yesterday. Where is it? Do we have it here still? I don't think so. But Icuna is up here. It's up here right here. So when I run Icuna, I can run it. Oops. Can I drag it? No. It runs it on my screen. Here it is. There it is. So this is Icuna. Yeah. So it was running it on my main screen for some reason, but I can drag it around. So here it is. If I click on Just Not Safari, that's my workspace that I saved. All my programs except Safari I had running at the time. I made sure Safari wasn't running, closed it down, which I could do right now, right? Quit Safari, but that will stop the music too, actually. But then when we're not running Safari, it shows me all the programs. I can minimize that. So I can show you all the programs that were running on this monitor. It was only the dictionary and the JW library app. They were the only ones running, okay? The excuse me, I meant to click something else. There we go. So, but this preferences is preferences, this program is usually shown, it's usually displayed on, or, yeah, it's usually running on my main monitor, not this monitor, so it's just here temporarily. I normally have it over there, but Ikuna, like I just showed you, it looks like this, right? Let's see if we can run it again. Now it remembers where it is. So there's Ikuna. And it looks, I have a couple of other workspaces I saved, but they didn't work. Can I delete them? I don't know. Let's, edit. Okay, edit the name of it. Okay. So I don't know how to delete those in Ikuna yet. I don't know how to delete the ones that don't work yet, but, it's not important anyway. I don't use them. I just use this one. So, and it's the one that comes up highlight. It's highlighted, or highlight. It's highlighted every time automatically. So I don't accidentally click the wrong one. It's just amazing. This program is amazing. But what I found today was I could start my system and I didn't even need to run this. Because it, even though it came up automatically on my screen like that, on the main monitor, I didn't need to run it because it was, well, I could actually quit that. I can quit Ikuna, too. I don't even have to run it. It still comes up automatically. I can quit it, but it will still come up automatically when I reboot because it's been installed, I guess. That's why. It comes up automatically. It's a brilliant little program. But I didn't need to run it because it retained all my windows. So apparently just the fact that I installed Ikuna fixed the window retention problem where all my windows came up correctly on reboot. Even Safari, I could leave it open. It still retained the position of Safari windows. Everything was correct. And that's never happened since I got the Dell until I installed Ikuna. So Ikuna is the key to this problem, I believe. But it somehow fixes all the problems. Even when you're not using Ikuna. But you can use it. And I do use it. Because I could say, you know, well, I'm not running it right now, so I come down here. Okay, now I want to show you the other things that you need to be aware of. What they will tell you is to go to Mission Control and to deselect automatically rearrange spaces. They tell you deselect this one and this bottom one, which says displays have separate spaces. They tell you to deselect those. And that might solve your problem. But that doesn't solve it. It might solve it at first. But the problem with saying, unchecking this one, the problem with unchecking displays have separate spaces, then you don't get these bars at the menu bar. You don't get the menu bar on every monitor then. Because each monitor doesn't have a separate space. And you don't get the toolbar at the bottom, or the dock, I should say. The dock at the bottom, you don't get that on every monitor. Because it only happens on the one monitor because you only have one space. You don't have a separate space for every monitor, which you do if you have that checked. So having it checked is better because every monitor then has a toolbar at the bottom, a dock, I mean. And every monitor then has a menu bar at the top. But only if this is checked. So you don't want to deselect that. And this automatically rearrange allows you to reboot and it will retain the position of your windows. So you don't want to uncheck that either. And you don't have to when you have Ikuna installed. The other thing is general. This is in the preferences in general. This close windows when quitting an app. Somebody said deselect that. Well, that apparently didn't matter. I deselected it, and it's working now. But I could try checking that again. That was by default. It was a check mark. It was checked. So it said close windows when quitting an app. That would mean if you had other windows open, like you're running a text editing app and it has other text files open, it will close all the windows when you quit the app. So, I mean, I can just probably just check that, but I'm not going to because my system booted correctly this morning, so I'm not going to change anything. But by default, that was normally checked. That's a check mark normally. Just so you know, these are the settings that I had been encouraged or advised to change when I was doing my research on and before I found Ikuna. But the real problem was nobody will promote Ikuna because it's a freeware. I guess that's why, right? Or nobody knows about it, first of all. But nobody was promoting it because there's no, it's not glamorous to promote anything that's free, right? It's not glamorous enough. I think that's the reason. And nobody believes it. That's the other thing. Nobody believes it's real if it's free. That's, they think, well, yeah, right, it's free. Well, then it probably doesn't work, right? People have this prejudice about things that are free. So, I mean, it just doesn't get, it's not that they even have prejudice. They don't even, it, the word about it doesn't spread because it's free. If it's a paid thing, the word spreads because somebody's getting money for it. And so people figure, well, if I spread that, that'll benefit the author or something. For some reason, they spread a paid program more readily than they spread a free one. Perhaps. I mean, that's speculation. I think that's the case. In our, in a capitalist society, that's the case, I think. So, it's really curious why I couldn't find Ikuna for hours and hours and hours. And I had to find it just eventually. I found it, but I don't even know how I found it now. It's remarkable. But it's not advertised by anybody. And it's the best program, the best thing I ever did since I got to Dell was to get Ikuna. But, well, no, that's not true. Display Placer was the best thing, and then Ikuna was the second best thing, maybe. But they're both equally powerful and both totally free. Now, it wasn't easy to install Ikuna, to install Ikuna. It was not easy to install Display Placer. Just got a bit of a headache here, slight headache. The other thing is that about headaches, I never get a headache ever since I started taking calcium. I haven't gotten any headaches. If you're getting headaches, it means your brain is, it could mean the common cause is your brain is oxygen deprived and calcium is oxygen rich because it's alkali, which means it has lots of OH, right? It has lots of OH, which is the alkali, is it called anion or cation? The cation, I guess. The negative ion, OH, OH minus. That's a cation, isn't it? Anion's positive? I think so, yeah. So the hydrogen ion is the acidic ion of water. OH is the alkali ion, OH minus, H plus. H plus is acid, OH minus is alkali, and calcium is an alkali earth metal, so it's rich in OH minus, which is full of electrons. So calcium is oxygen rich, but it's also electron rich. And that means it's incredibly good at preventing disease. So calcium is the best thing you can ever do for a headache and anything else. But oxygen, it's oxygen rich. It encourages the OH minus to hang around. And that is what is the oxygen part of water, right? So when you're taking calcium, you just don't get, and you don't get lactic acid because you got OH, which is the base or caustic molecule that neutralizes any acid. So it neutralizes lactic acid, so you don't get stiff muscles either when you take calcium. So calcium is a phenomenal thing. It's phenomenal. And about the idea of misinformation, this idea about protect yourself from misinformation, it's curious because some people, well, the question is, what is misinformation? To some people, misinformation is anything that's not mainstream. Or in the case of the Watchtower Society, they might think that misinformation is anything that's not in agreement with their publications, right? It's whatever you're not believing is true, that's misinformation to you, right? So if it doesn't accord with your standard accepted practice, then it's misinformation. That's by definition. So, but that's not necessarily the case. That these things are misinformation, they could be true. So how do you find out what is misinformation, right? How do you determine what is correct and what is misinformation? That's the real question. Because you can't protect yourself from it if you don't know what it is. So, I mean, the only way to protect yourself from misinformation is to know the truth. Then you can recognize misinformation when you know the truth. And you get the truth by finding it and testing it and seeing that it works. And that's true of nutrition to do with calcium and vitamin K2 and vitamin C and all these other vitamins and minerals. You need to prove it to yourself that it's true before you can be protected from the other misinformation, which people spout all the time. Anybody who's talking about vitamins or anything, I'm not going to even start getting into drugs because that's just ridiculous, because it's wrong to even start down that path. But it's a much bigger path because man-made things are much greater in number than the natural things, right? Because man creates all these different things. There's no end to it all, but so we can't even start on that. But with any vitamin, they might advertise and say a certain vitamin causes this, or vitamin deficiency of this vitamin causes this symptom, right? Like deficiency of vitamin C causes scurvy, for example, right? But the problem with this idea is that if you're calcium deficient, the deficiency of vitamin anything else, some other vitamin, might create a completely different response in the body because you're calcium deficient. You see, because calcium is the main mineral in the body. So what is misinformation is a big question. That's the problem. That's a really big problem. So it's a big, it's in itself a big question. And you can't, it's not as simple as just saying, well, we'll just agree with the governing body. If we agree with the governing body, then we won't be having any misinformation. That's not true, because there are lots of things, like the chronology of the world is wrong, according to, the governing body has a chronology of the world which is wrong based on the evidence. When you look at the evidence, their chronology is wrong. So you can't say just listen to the governing body, because they're wrong. And if they're wrong on that, then they're wrong on a lot of other things too. So that's the reason why they won't admit they're wrong, is because they have to admit they're wrong on all sorts of other things. Then, they would have to admit that they're just basically unreliable. They have to admit that you can't trust their information. But that's not really their reason. Of course, they believe it. They believe their chronology. That's really what it is. But, they also know that if they accept that they're wrong on something, they have to change everything. They may well sincerely believe that their chronology is correct, and I understand that. I just don't accept that their chronology is correct because I know different. So, you study these things, right? But it's not in harmony with the Bible what they're saying either. They've just taken one scripture as more important than some other scripture, and that one scripture didn't really necessitate the conclusions that they've drawn either. That they've said that at some point that 70 years was how long Israel was in Babylon, but it never says that in the Bible. In fact, it says something completely different than that. It says the 70 years was the 70 years that Babylon would rule over the nations. That's what it says. It doesn't say Israel would be in Babylon for 70 years. It never says that. But they've interpreted one particular scripture as meaning that, and then they've ignored all the other scriptures. So their chronology is not even consistent with scripture, let alone consistent with secular chronology, which is also very strongly in favor of the destruction of Jerusalem in 587 BCE, as the genealogy also agrees. So the destruction of Jerusalem in 587 implies that Jeremiah was put in the cistern in 588, not 608. So there's a 20-year difference in the chronologies. And the chronology espoused by the Watchtower Society doesn't hold up under any scrutiny of any academic standard or anything according to the facts, any common sense, it doesn't hold any water, because it doesn't even conform to scripture. So, and there are many ways, I've talked about this before, but there are many ways to show that scripturally as well, in the book of Jeremiah and the book of Chronicles and talking about the time period when Babylon would enslave the nations, including Israel, and that the 70 years would end at Babylon in the actual case of 539 BCE, but it would end at Babylon, and that would be the end of those 70 years when Babylon was dominating over the nations. So the beginning of the 70 years is 608, or it ended actually in 539, so it's 70 years inclusive. But we also have the first official year of Cyrus in 538 in Babylon, which is 70 full years after 608, when the times of the Gentiles began in the genealogy. Okay, so, I mean, that's my chronology, that's the genealogy that I presented in all my articles online, and that we'll hopefully talk about. Maybe we'll even start considering and studying a chapter at a time of my articles. I think we will at some point. We'll do that. I think that's a great idea, and I got that idea from somebody online. Let's just leave it anonymous. But I think this is a very important thing that I've found out about macOS, and I just hope that some other people who run macOS will be benefited by this. But anybody who runs only one monitor will not need this. This is only for people who run multiple monitors, like I do. But even if you have only two, I guess one external monitor won't be a problem. But with two external monitors, it's going to be possible that they get swapped. So your two external monitors can be swapped around. So in other words, if they're swapped, that would mean you can't drag the mouse to the right, you have to go to the left to get to the right-hand monitor instead, because this arrangement of displays here is backwards, right? It would be backwards if these were arranged wrong. But also, they could be oriented wrong, like positioned wrong. So the two external monitors might be down below instead of up above, or they might be... So yeah, they, without display placer, you wouldn't be able to position them either. So this can help people with even one monitor external to get it positioned right using display placer. Actually, this can help everybody with an external monitor, definitely. And then Ikuna, you don't need Ikuna for that probably, but because you only have one external monitor. But if you have two external monitors, you need Ikuna. But even with you do need Ikuna probably, because you need to know that your programs are not running on your main monitor, but they're on the external monitor. So you might need Ikuna. But it's so easy to install Ikuna. To install Ikuna is so easy. It's so simple. It's such a powerful program. And look, it doesn't even show up until I click up there. Where is it? Is it not running? Maybe it's not running. Let's run Ikuna. So we go Ikuna. I mean, we find it in here, and then we say, Ikuna. There, it's running. Okay. So now... it does show up. Right. We don't have to keep it running all the time, either. We can just say, quit Ikuna. It's gone. So I think that's the end of this video. It's really been exciting for me to find out that I can solve... First of all, it was... very disappointing and daunting, but a daunting problem to realize that my new monitor had sent all my windows askew every time I rebooted. And it wasn't just my windows that it annihilated in terms of the positions of which it annihilated, that it was also the monitor arrangement was decimated every time I rebooted. That was absolutely catastrophic and abysmal. I can't think of enough adjectives to describe it. But I mean, as long as you're willing to spend the time to rearrange all these monitors every time you boot, it's not a problem, right? And there are workarounds. I could have just said, well, I just won't reboot. Because this system will run around the clock for many, many days before it'll need rebooting. So could have just done that. That's fine. I mean, that's a workable scenario. It's workable. But the amazing thing is, you can shut it down, and you can reboot it, and it works. But you just need to know a few things. Now, this is a brand new system. My M1 Max MacBook Pro came out in the fall of 2021, right? It's a new system, just like the M1 Mac Mini came out in the fall of 2020, or the summer. Wait a minute. No, the fall. It came out in the fall of 2020, but I didn't buy it till the summer of 2021, my M1 Mac Mini. And it's a backup computer in case something happens to this computer. It's my backup. But, you know, I've got, it's just like my Dell monitor is a backup, or my Acer monitor now is a backup for the Dell in case something happens to my main monitor because I have the other Acer. But now I'm confident the other Acer, I can get it to work with Ikuna. It's not going to be an issue. So I'm really, really, I'm so excited about this because my Acer monitor was creating boot problems just like the problems I'm having here, where, except it was not scattering this monitor arrangement. It wasn't destroying that. It was just destroying which was the main monitor. He couldn't keep track of which was the main monitor. That's the other thing. Every time I boot now, my Dell Alienware is the main monitor, and the login screen always comes up right dead center of my main monitor. Every time. That was, and Ikuna solved that problem. That's the other thing. That's worth, it's priceless probably, but it's worth, you know, just an immeasurable amount of heartache and pain. You want to log in on the screen that you choose. You don't want to log in on the screen that is decided by your OS. So that was solved also by Ikuna. Now, maybe not even Ikuna. Maybe it was solved by the DisplayPlacer, actually. I don't think DisplayPlacer can solve that one, though. Actually, I don't think it has that power. Oh, wait a minute. Maybe let's take a look again. One more time. Let's look and see. What does DisplayPlacer do with regard to... Does it say anything in DisplayPlacer? Well, let's do it. Can you see this? Well, let me just move this out of our way here for a second. Yeah. Let's just make my window a little smaller and transition so that I can read this. Okay. Well, then I have to move that. Okay. Good. That's good. It works. Okay. So, in DisplayPlacer, you can see it doesn't specify, or maybe it does specify. We should be able to see whether it specifies which monitor is the main monitor here. I don't think it does. I don't see anything about which monitor is main. It would say something like main or... So if I look at my main monitor, that's my Dell. It gives it's the first one listed here, right here, right? DisplayPlacer ID CE29, etc. That's my Dell, because it's 3440 by 1440 and it's 165 hertz, which is only my Dell is capable of 165 hertz. In my case, I'm running it at 100, and I had to change that number to 100, but whatever. But you see that scaling off origin degree zero ID, and then the next ID comes up, and there's a new quote. A new quote begins, but the quote ends, and then the quote begins again for a new monitor. So none of this says it's the main monitor. So, yeah, it's not keeping track of which monitor is the main monitor. So somehow, Ikuna somehow facilitates that. The problem was with the old Acer, too. With the damaged Acer, when I would boot, it would come up too slowly. The HDMI input on the Acer was too slow. So it would come up slowly. And that meant that the main monitor had to be the integrated monitor of the MacBook Pro, because it was the one that was the default, essentially. When the other main monitor fails, the default is your main computer monitor, which is the integrated laptop monitor, became the main monitor by default, because it didn't detect the other monitor yet. So it used to completely default to the wrong monitor as the main. And so, but rebooting would fix it because it would detect the Acer quicker the second time. Apparently, it would fix it. So my main monitor was then, it was quite fine. It was then this lower central monitor was my main monitor. That used to be the Acer. Now it's this other one. And I'm booting off an external drive. That could be the problem too. The fact that I'm booting off an external drive is creating new issues. I never experienced, did I experience these issues on the internal? I don't think I experienced the issues on the running off the SSD of the laptop, of the internal SSD, that is the M1 Max laptop, the MacBook Pro, M1 Max, MacBook Pro 16-inch laptop running off the SSD, I don't think has these problems, but I haven't tested it. It was running fine before I got the Dell. It didn't have any issues. I don't even think it had the issues with the lower Acer monitor running or not being the main monitor on boot up. I don't think it had those issues. I just didn't test it because it's my backup system now, my SSD internally. I'm running off an external drive, which throws everything out of whack a little bit. But I think people need to be able to run off the external drive because they need to be able to buy a really fast NVMe drive that's large in size. They can get it cheaper than buying the internal SSD from Apple, and they can run their system off the external drive and save money that way. I think that's the reason why I believe it should help people in addition to me. I'm running off the external drive because I don't want to run off the internal drive and wear it out. That's what I'm doing. I want to keep it in case I want to keep the laptop for many years. I want to be able to see if I can preserve that internal drive as a backup for what I'm doing on the external drive now, right? And I like to run off of one drive but have another one with a complete OS ready to go. Now I should really back up my system and under the internal drive of the laptop. The internal drive, I should have I should clone it maybe. But I'm not sure that these cloning programs they're not up to date with the Apple Silicon either yet. A lot of them. I mean, it's still too new. The M1 Max is still a new system, relatively. So, I mean, time will tell. But I could clone it, but I don't even know that it's going to work off the SSD. That's the other thing. Running off the external drive is different from running off an SSD internally. That could throw everything out of whack if I try to. So, I mean, I just might want to keep the internal SSD the way it is and run it the way it is as my backup. And then I don't want to necessarily clone it. If I had two systems running on two external drives, I could clone those two systems running off two identical external drives, for example. Maybe I should do that and have a clone system that way. But you see, my reasoning is functionality first. What works first? What's true? And what works? And this myth, there's a myth about misinformation too, sometimes. Because obviously the whole world believed that Ikuna didn't even exist, if you looked at some of the forums. And yet Ikuna does exist, and it's totally free, and it's the best program you could ever get to solve this problem that I've ever seen, or that I could imagine. But even if Ikuna didn't exist, you could go to MacMost on YouTube. What was it called? MacMost Video? Or what is it called again? I'm not even running my browser right now, am I? No, you see? Safari's shut down. I'm not running it. I don't need it. But, anyway. I talked about it in a video very recently about Gary at MacMost Video or MacMost something on YouTube. MacMost something. I'm sure if you Google MacMost and Gary, you'll find it. But he talks about using Automator to do the same thing that Ikuna does. are virtually the same thing, saving all the windows. And you can do that as long as it's not an app that's running multiple windows. So I suggested, I'm still suggesting, if it's a browser that has multiple windows, or any program with multiple windows, let that program remember where those windows are. And don't run that program when you are shutting down your system, is another idea. But with Ikuna, that might not even be a problem anymore. I'm not sure. Because I just found today I was able to reboot and there's no issue. I just don't think that's going to work every time. So I'm going to be closing my browser, making let the browser. Now, if it had failed this morning, I was going to attempt to shut down Safari, right? I would have shut down Safari if it failed in the sense that Safari windows were everywhere in the wrong place. I would have shut down Safari, and then I would have shut down the computer and rebooted or just restarted. And then when it came back up, try restarting Safari after everything is in place, like after Ikuna has been run or after the display placer has been worked and all that. And give it a, you know, let the system settle for a second or two before I try and run Safari. And then that might have fixed it, even if it was haywire. But if that didn't work, I'd have to reconfigure, drag all my Safari windows where I want them, shut it down, and then reboot. And then, you know, and every time I restart Safari, make sure that Safari's set to reopen all the windows that were open in the previous session. That's all. But I mean, it's really not it's not a very big inconvenience to shut down Safari every time before I shut down the computer. It's not a very big thing. I just forgot to do it last night. That was the first time ever. So, first time I ever thought of the idea. So I forgot to do it last night. But that's it. It's really, really much more involved than you might imagine to have multiple displays. But when you have the solution to it, it's very elegant. Unfortunately, I had to install, you might have to install Homebrew, you might have to install the Xcode. You need Xcode, and I already had Xcode installed. So you'd have to install that, but then I had to update it anyway, and that takes a long time to download the update, like hours or a couple, you know, an hour. I'm not sure how long it took me. It took a while. But I had to update that because it recommended update it or else delete it. But so you have to install Xcode. You have to install the command line developer tools, which is another thing, which took me 45 minutes to download. And so that's required. Then you have to just download Display Placer, which is pretty easy. Or you don't have to download it. You just have to install it using Homebrew. So you got to install Homebrew, Xcode, command line developer tools, and Display Placer. That's a lot to fix this. That's a lot of things you have to do, but that's what you have to do. But once you've done it, Xcode is usable for other things too, potentially quite a lot of other things. You may never need it though. So I don't know if you want to do this, but it's worth doing it just for this alone of getting these monitor arrangements set up correctly. And then you need to run Automator in macOS, which is built into macOS. Automator is built in. You need to run Automator so that you can set this automatic, make an app in Automator is what I did. But there's other ways to get it to boot automatically to run Display Placer on boot up. But I use that method, Automator, an Automator app that I put in my login, in my startup, with my startup items. So it starts up every time on login and runs Display Placer, which it couldn't run if it didn't have, if I hadn't had Homebrew, if I hadn't installed Xcode, and if I hadn't installed the command line developer tools. I needed to install all those things, so I was told by Homebrew anyway, to in order to do this, in order to get Display Placer to work. And then Ikuna installed in 15 seconds. Ikuna is way easier, but Ikuna won't help you if your displays are all over the place. If this configuration is not right, Ikuna is not going to help you. not much. You know, I mean, it won't solve the problem of dragging your mouse from window to window here, or from monitor to monitor. It won't solve that issue. So that's the problem. That's the solution. Those are the solutions. That's the problem. This is Ward Green, December 26, 2022. I was going to say 2028 for some reason. Why was I thinking that? It's December 26, 2022, 15:50 hours. I love you. Obviously, why else would I go through all that if I didn't love you? And I've got to say bye for now.